Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, our very own critic. The films are Dr. Sleep, Mr. Toilet, and The Irishman, which I don't think is... It's close.
Well, we do have three movies named after people, so I think that's pretty consistent. That's our theme for the week.
All right.
Two of these are pretty big movies that people have been talking about. The third, the one in the middle, Mr. Toilet, is not one that's going to be at every multiplex, but I think it'll be kind of fun to talk about it for a moment. But let's begin with Dr. Sleep. This is based on a novel by Stephen King, and this is a horror movie, and this is the sequel to The Shining. Now, The Shining is one of Stephen King's, I think, one of his better books, certainly a very, very effective horror novel about a man and his wife and little boy who are staying in a hotel that has been closed down for the winter in the middle of the mountains. And the man, Dan Torrance, is going to be the caretaker of the place while it's closed down for the winter. And he goes, not so gradually, insane and becomes a horrible threat to the lives of his wife and his little boy. And there turn out to be spirits and ghosts and evil things lurking all over the hotel. So that is The Shining. And The Shining is a good novel, and it was made into one of the great horror movies of all time by the great Stanley Kubrick, with a cast that featured Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall in the main roles. And both Stephen King's novel and very much Stanley Kubrick's movie, The Shining, they are real classics. And again, Kubrick's film is one of the great horror movies of all time. So now, all these years later, decades later, we have a sequel directed by written and directed by the totally different filmmaker Mike Flanagan, nowhere near a filmmaker of Stanley Kubrick's towering stature. And so the question becomes, how is the sequel? Does the sequel live up to the original? Well, it would be almost impossible for any horror movie, including a sequel, to live up to the great status of The Shining, which is a very great film, and I'm not the only person who thinks that. Dr. Sleep, the sequel, is a much more ordinary movie, which sort of goes out of its way and tries to be difficult and different in all kinds of ways, while still picking up on some of the fascinating things about The Shining. And I would say it succeeds part of the way. It's a pretty good horror movie, but I can't go farther than that. So what we have in the sequel to The Shining, Dr. Sleep, we have the character Danny Torrance, who has grown up to be Ewan McGregor. As you might surprise from a little boy who had that horrific experience of a winter in the Overlook Hotel and with all the ghosts and spirits and evil things, including his evil father, roaming about. He has grown up to be a very troubled person, the little boy. He's grown up to be a troubled person. And he is an alcoholic, and he just has a very unsuccessful life. So he goes off to a new place, a new home, tries to get his life started again, joins Alcoholics Anonymous, overcomes his drinking problem, and takes a job in a nursing home where it turns out that he still has what The Shining is named after, the ability to shine, which is to say he still has extrasensory perception. He can still read minds, detect distant events, and things like that. And this serves him well in his work in the nursing home, because he is able to lend comfort to some of the old people there who are in their very, it's actually a hospice, who are facing their very final days before death. Then another character enters the movie, a little girl named Abra, played in a wonderful performance by Keeley Curran. And she is a very, very strong and powerful person with The Shining, but she has an enemy in a different place. And this is a woman with the very odd name of Rose the Hat. And she is the leader of a band of crazy sort of supernatural people who can be immortal and live more or less forever if they are able to kill children who have the shining and sort of imbibe their spirits as the children are dying. So we have here a horror movie, which about other, among other things, is about killing children. So what we have here is this long-distance duel going on between the woman, Rose the Hat, who is the leader of this evil band, this little girl with this very powerful shining ability, little African-American girl, and we have Ewan McGregor, who gets somehow caught in the middle of all this with his own ability to shine and his desire to do good with his shining and also to keep his life from falling apart again. So again, it's a movie that is, it's a pretty good horror movie. One of the most notable things about it is that it is very long. It is about 2.5 hours long. That seems to be the fashion nowadays. It really does not have enough ideas or enough tension to sustain a running time that long. So after a while, it just runs out of steam. But Ewan McGregor is good in one of the leading roles. Rebecca Ferguson is wonderful as the evil Rose the Hat. Keely Curran is really, really excellent as the little girl. And there's a pretty interesting supporting cast as well. So if you're into horror movies, run out and see Dr. Sleep. And if you're into The Shining, you probably want to see it just to find out what's happened to Dan Torrance all these years later. But I can't say it's one of the great horror movies. It's just sort of okay. Turning to our second film, which is really different, I'll give you the full title now. It is called, it has a subtitle. It is Mr. Toilet, the World's Number Two Man. So if you thought a movie, if you thought the title couldn't get worse after the first part, Mr. Toilet, the World's Number Two Man, yes, it is a kind of a pun, makes it even more sort of crazy. But this is a documentary. This is not some sort of a crazy old exploitation movie. It's a documentary about a man whose name is Jack Sim, and it's a very serious documentary because what Jack Sim, he is a crusader, and his cause is the fact that in many parts of the parts of the world that are often called the developing world, the lack of proper sanitation facilities, particularly proper toilets, is a tremendous health hazard. And it's just harrowing to watch this documentary and start to realize along the way how really big a problem this is in a lot of places. And Jack Sim tries to come up with programs, tries to come up with funding, tries to come up with new ideas, new technologies to combat this problem in different parts of the world. The movie was made by Lily Zepeda, who keeps the thing moving along very rapidly. We get a very interesting portrait of Mr. Toilet himself, Jack Sim. He loves that nickname for himself. He loves to be called that. And we find out a whole lot about these real, very pressing, and in some cases very harrowing sanitation problems in so much of the world. And we find out about the various different things that he's trying to do to combat this. And we learn some interesting things along the way about toilet technology and the various different ways there are that range from the very, very low tech to the very, very high tech to try to address these problems of bringing enough decent toilets into the world, especially into parts of the world where the economies are extremely depressed. I had a good time watching Mr. Toilet. It is a very informative documentary. There are parts of it that are kind of yucky, and you might want to turn your head away from the screen a little bit. But for a movie on this subject, it has to be kind of yucky. And again, it's a very important subject. And the movie is actually, even though it has a lot of humor in it, a very serious look at that. So I really did want to touch bases with it. Anybody who's interested in problems of sanitation, of world poverty, of trying to lift up parts of the world that are in a whole lot of sanitation crisis, anybody interested in those topics should really try to seek out Mr. Toilet. It's a very worthwhile film. Turning to our third film for today, it is The Irishman, and this is the new movie by Martin Scorsese. And as I have said many times, I've been saying it for a very long time, Martin Scorsese is the greatest living American filmmaker. He is truly a great artist of the screen. The Irishman, which stars some really terrific people, including some who have worked with Scorsese before, like Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel, and then people who haven't worked with him before, too. It has a sensational cast. The Irishman is controversial for one reason, because it's about to open on Netflix. It is in movie theaters right now, and very soon it's going to be on Netflix. And as I've been saying, my position on this is that I see the sort of cable TV world of streaming video and the world of theatrical movies as pretty much one continuous world now. They overlap with each other tremendously. Again, there is still controversy about this because, first of all, there are movie theater chains that don't want to play movies that are simultaneously going to be on Netflix, and The Irishman is opening up very, very soon on Netflix. It hasn't quite opened yet, but there are theater chains that just say, why would we want to show this movie? Because it's going to be on Netflix. On the other hand, Scorsese would, of course, much rather that people see this very big movie on a nice big screen in all of its glowing sharpness and clearness and clarity. So, you know, there's that kind of difficulty here. I did see The Irishman in a movie theater, and I do think that's the way to see it. But hey, if you want to wait and see it when it opens up on Netflix, that's fine with me, and it's probably fine with Scorsese too. He made The Irishman for Netflix partly because they were willing to put the resources in it so that he could make the way he wanted it to be made. And I think he was just willing to accept the sacrifice of the fact that a lot of people are going to see it on the small screen. There is one very good reason why a lot of people might want to see it on the small screen, and this returns us to the question of length. As I mentioned, Dr. Sleep is around 2.5 hours long. It's actually longer than that. The Irishman, get ready for this, is about 3.5 hours long. So anybody who's going to want to take an intermission along the way during the film might want to see it on Netflix, where you can pause it instead of maybe having to run off to the restroom or something and then rush back again real quick and miss a little tiny bit of the movie. So that's maybe one reason to watch it on Netflix. That said, I think it is best seen on the big screen, but however one sees it, it's definitely worth seeing. So what is The Irishman about? The Irishman is based on a book by a guy named Charles Brand, and it is very, very much the story of a man named Frank Sheeran, who is played by Robert De Niro, and he is absolutely the main character of this movie, and we're seeing all the events through his eyes. Now, in real life, Frank Sheeran gave a whole bunch of interviews very, very, very late in his life to this author who wrote this nonfiction book, and Frank Sheeran claimed to be the person who killed Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa, the legendary head of the Teamsters Union around the middle part of the 20th century, the most powerful union in America, probably the most powerful union in the world, and known to be a union with a whole lot of corruption in it, thanks very much to Jimmy Hoffa, who is the head of the union. And he, by the way, is played in the movie by Al Pacino. So that is really what the movie is about. The movie is about the relationship between Frank Sheeran and Jimmy Hoffa, that is, between Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. Again, Frank Sheeran being the person who claimed late in his life to have been the person who killed Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa famously disappeared late in his career, and nobody to this day ever knew what really happened to his body. And in fact, nobody knows for sure what really happened to him, because Frank Sheeran claimed that he killed Jimmy Hoffa, but nobody knows for positively sure whether that was true or not. In any case, that's what we have in this movie. We have the story of Frank Sheeran. At the beginning of the movie, he is just this very low-level guy who's driving a truck and doing a little bit of petty crime to help to make ends meet with his family. Then he is introduced to Jimmy Hoffa, and Jimmy Hoffa takes a liking to him, and Jimmy Hoffa hires him on, and he starts to rise up in the ranks of Jimmy Hoffa's kind of hench persons, and pretty soon he's doing all sorts of errands for Jimmy Hoffa and big jobs for Jimmy Hoffa, a lot of which are extremely crooked. And along the way, we meet a whole lot of other people who are exactly the sort of hoodlums that you run across in all kinds of Martin Scorsese movies. And these people are played by the likes of Harvey Keitel and Joe Pesci, another very long-time Scorsese associate dating back to Raging Bull. Bobby Cannavale is in the movie. The movie just has this terrific cast. And again, as so many Scorsese movies are, particularly great ones like Goodfellas, this is very much about Italian-American hoodlums, but here we also have a bunch of Irish-American hoodlums, as one can gather from the title, The Irishman. So I'm going to stress again, the wonderful cast, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, other people like Anna Paquin is in it, Jesse Plemons has a small but very important role, a whole lot of really interesting people in this movie. Big question. I have already said that I have long regarded and still regard Martin Scorsese as the greatest living American filmmaker. Is this film a masterpiece? The Irishman is not a masterpiece. I wish it were. It is not at the level of the very greatest Scorsese films. I would say that Taxi Driver is one of his greatest. Goodfellas, which is very similar to The Irishman in a lot of ways, is one of his greatest. Raging Bull is a very great film. Even Mean Streets, very early Scorsese, is a very great Scorsese movie. I don't think The Irishman measures up to any of those movies. But with its 3.5-hour length, its spectacular cast, and its very epic storytelling, it covers a lot of years and a whole lot of historical events, because it pretty much covers a spectrum of a very large part of the 20th century, and all kinds of things are going on in the background of the story, from the Bay of Pigs invasion to Watergate, etc., etc. It has an epic scope in that way. It's a very quiet movie in a lot of ways. It has terrible violence, but not as terrible as it is in a number of Scorsese movies. So it's in a way, it's almost a muted kind of a restrained movie by Scorsese standards. Again, I cannot consider it a masterpiece. I wish I could, but it's very, very worth seeing. And if you want to see movie making, which is in a way so self-assured and so confident and done with such an expert touch that it doesn't have to sort of push itself in your face, judge that way, The Irishman comes close to being a masterpiece, but doesn't quite make it. So that is my somewhat mixed feeling story this week, Joe.
Thank you very much. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, The Films, Dr. Sleep, Mr. Toilet, and The Irishman.